Hey everyone, welcome to the Pod Awareness Podcast, and thanks for joining me. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube, and also check us out at podawareness.org and on Instagram at podawareness_official. On Instagram, we are doing submissions for Pet of the Week, where you can submit your foster pet, and we'll pick one winner every month, and we'll give $200 to their choice of charity or foster. Thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Paw Awareness Podcast. Today I'm talking with Samantha Ranlett, the marketing specialist of SPCA, an animal welfare organization and shelter in the Raleigh, North Carolina community. I'm really excited to be talking with you. Thank you so much for coming on. Feel free to, I want you to introduce yourself as well as a little bit more about the organization and what it is that you guys specialize in.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'm excited to be here to be representing the SPCA. Yeah, like you said, we're the SPCA of Wake County. We're a private nonprofit rescue in Raleigh, North Carolina. We serve 56 counties last year across North Carolina, helping to pull animals from their local county shelters. So we're focused on empowering pets and people and reducing shelter euthanasia and providing low-cost spay neuters to make sure that our goal, our mission is to get to a point where all healthy and adoptable pets can be adopted and that we're reducing euthanasia across the state and we're making great progress. So we're really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, and that's really exciting too. And I talk with a bunch of different organizations and one thing that I find is that there are, there's usually like a radius that they can only deal with. So when you say that you're dealing with 56 counties, what do the logistics look like behind that? And I want to ask too, are there a lot of partnerships involved? What do you guys specialize in? I mean, I feel like there's so many ways I can think things I can think of here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 56 counties, that's a long list. It's definitely a juggling act all the time. So there's 100 counties in North Carolina. So we're sort of slowly expanding every year. We're reaching more and more of those counties around the Raleigh radius. We do have partnerships with those county shelters. So that's primarily taking pets in from the local municipal shelters, the ones that have open intake where when people need to surrender a pet right away or a stray animal is found, they go to those county shelters and those county shelters have limited resources and the pets have a certain amount of time to be adopted or to find placement or they run into the risk of euthanasia. So we work with them to try to alleviate the spacing issues that they run into and bring those pets in here as a no-kill rescue so they have all the time in the world that they need. If they need specialty veterinary care or say a dog with heartworm disease needs heartworm treatment, injuries, things like that, we can take those on here at the SPCA. So we have a few county shelters that we have staff that drives out to. So we go out in our transport van and we've got some space available to pull some pets and we go through and we rescue the pets that need to be pulled. And then we have a number of partnerships with those county shelters where they have staff or volunteers that work to bring the pets down to us. So there's a network of transport volunteers that help out with that. And occasionally the staff has the resources to send, the shelter has the resources to send their own staff. So it's a little bit different. We do our best to create a unique relationship with each of those county shelters so that whatever they need for us to help them to make it work, we figure it out, we find a way and get those pets from point A to point B.
And what are some of the common issues geographically that you're seeing in, like, what does that look like in terms of the North Carolina area? Because I feel like every area across the United States kind of is battling, they're seeing a little bit different issues, right? So what's that look like on the landscape in North Carolina?
Yeah, it really is different everywhere. Where we're located, Raleigh, we're right within Wake County, right in the Triangle. We have a little bit more resources to our municipal shelters, the ones that are close by, but there's also a greater population. So we see the shelters here, such as the Wake County shelter, has a huge influx of pets, way more pet population than a lot of the smaller counties or the more rural shelters. But as a result of that, they also have more resources to work with those pets. So we'll find a completely different situation in one of the more rural counties that's out with a lower population where they've got a really small shelter. So one shelter that we work with is the Northampton County Shelter. The the whole shelter for the entire county has 6 dog runs. So they've got room to take in 6 dogs. And if the 7th dog comes in and they don't have space, they're in a bad situation. So we're sort of figuring out the different relationships with those different counties. So if Northampton is running out of placement, it can make a really big difference for us to pull 3 dogs from there, and it clears out a lot of space. So some of the shelters with fewer resources need a little bit more help. And some of them that do have more resources, they just have massive, massive populations. And so they're relying on a whole different network of rescues to help them figure out the placement for that. But in general, that's what we see, is that those more rural county shelters tend to have a lot more stray animals that are coming in, animals that aren't spayed or neutered, or they were working dogs. We get a lot of hound dogs that were, you know, used for hunting, and they're retired and they end up living as strays, or they escape their property, versus Wake County or somewhere in the Triangle where we're getting a lot more owned pets who are being surrendered to the shelter. So yeah, it's a little bit different everywhere. And right here in North Carolina, we're one of the states that has more of a pet overpopulation problem than say up in the Northeast, where they've got it more under control and they're able to actually bring pets from the South up to the North because they have the resources and there aren't as many pets there in need. But here we're still in the thick of it, and there are more pets in need than there are actually placement and resources for them.
And what do you think, you know, this is kind of a big question, but what do you think, if you like kind of climb up the ladder, so to speak, and try and the head of the snake, I guess, where do you think this starts? And from your opinion, professional opinion, is that from an educational standpoint or like a political agenda? What do you think is your opinion on that?
I think it boils down to a lot of different things. I think an education is a big one. That's one of the things that we're trying to focus on. Some of it's resources and access to those resources. So we'll see, you know, in one city, part of the city will have all of the vet's offices and all of the pet stores all located in the wealthier part of the city. And the less wealthy part of the city will have no pet stores, no vet's offices, no access to low-cost veterinary care. And a lot of it is people that don't necessarily know, say, the importance of spay-neuter. So the folks that have pets that live outside that maybe don't understand why spay-neuter is important, their pets are a lot more likely to get pregnant and start having litters and start reproducing because they're already outside, there's other pets around. So there's different sorts of issues with the population boom, but a lot of it does come down to a lack of resources right now. There are some resources, but not quite enough to meet the need for pet rehoming. So if you've got a dog that you need to find placement for, it's not necessarily easy to find a place that can take that dog in. And so they do tend to end up at the county shelter. Or we see a lot of issues with breed restrictions with people, or issues with their landlord, where surrendered pets are coming in because they are above the weight limit or they're a restricted breed. That's a huge reason why we see pets surrendered around here. So it boils down to a lot of things. I think some of it is policy and some of it is attitude regarding certain breeds and certain types of dogs. Some of it comes down to access to low-cost vet care, low-cost spay-neuter. The people that don't have that when their pet comes down with an expensive illness or needs treatment and they're not in a position to pay for that, or they risk losing, you know, their own food, their own house, they will often surrender the pet to the shelter in the hopes that somebody will come along and take care of that without necessarily understanding that there are a huge number of pets that are all competing for the attention of adopters in those shelters. So those are some of the areas where we're trying to get our tendrils in and start really assessing and making the impact that we can. Back in the early 2000s, we created Susan and Randall Ward sponsored the Saving Lives Spay-Neuter Clinic, which we've got right here at our Pet Adoption Center. It offers low-cost spay-neuters for owned pets, for feral and community cats, and for all the pets that come through the SPCA. So we spay and neuter every pet that's adopted out through here. And since opening that, that clinic has done over 61,000 spay-neuter surgeries, which is a huge number. If you can imagine how many potential litters prevented, that is, that clinic alone has made a really big impact. And we're hoping it'll continue to do so over the next several years and help us get to that point where the balance of adopters and placement options it actually meets, and we don't have that disparity.
That's amazing that you guys have done that, and that, you know, you've made that big of an impact. And I always like to ask this question: what do you think are some things that you guys are really good at? Like, what are, if you had to pick a couple of things, where do you guys? Because I feel like every organization kind of has their own unique spot in, you know, in the community. So what's that like for you guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right. You know, we talk to other organizations, and it's interesting the difference in the programs that everybody has and where they're putting the focus of their needs. One of the things that spay neuter clinic is a huge thing that we're able to offer, that people are so relieved when they find out that that exists. And so we're really excited to have that program running. We've also kind of found ourselves to be a little bit of a safe haven for heartworm positive dogs. They end up at the shelters a lot. Heartworms are a lot more common in moist, humid climates like North Carolina because they're transmitted through mosquitoes. So stray dogs living outside without heartworm prevention, it's a lot more common than I think most people think, how many dogs do get heartworm disease, and it's really serious. And the county shelters don't have the resources to treat heartworm disease because it's expensive. It can be a couple of thousand dollars to treat a dog for heartworm. So last year we took in 104 heartworm positive dogs and fully treated them. And so that's a huge, wonderful program that we've got here. We will get transporters coming in from those county shelters with a dog with heartworms, and they say they have no options for this pet. They can't put it up for adoption because it's got a heartworm disease. They can't find a rescue who has the resources to take it in. And so that have that feeling of being the option for that dog when you know there really wasn't anything else, but being the one place that they can go where we can actually provide that is just really exciting, and it's really wonderful. And we hear similar things with kitten season. If you're familiar, I'm sure you talked to a lot of folks in the rescue community. You've heard kitten season before. We are in the midst of kitten season right now. All summer long, cats outside with the warmer months are breeding like crazy, especially outdoor community cats. And the shelters are just absolutely bombarded with kittens coming in. And we get calls from people down at our admission center saying, I have called every rescue in town asking to find placement for these kittens. I found them under the deck of my house or on the side of the road, and nobody has the space to take them in. And we almost always can say yes to taking in those kittens. We took in over 1,000 last year, and we're expecting even more this year. And it's just, it's a massive program. We take in more kittens every year than any other type of animal, more than puppies, more than adult cats, more than adult dogs. And it's a huge success because every kitten that comes in gets spayed and neutered and goes out to a home. And most of those were born outside. And if somebody like the Good Samaritan who found them hadn't intervened, they would be turning into an unsocialized feral outdoor cat, not spayed or neutered, and they would be contributing to the kitten population as well. So every kitten that comes in is a success story, and that kitten program is a huge thing. So that's a big part of where we put our focus, is taking in pets from those county shelters. Having those partnerships with the county shelters is a huge strength of ours, to be able to alleviate their need to euthanize. Taking in all of the kittens ever, every year, a bajillion kittens. All the heartworm dogs ever. We've taken so many. Our vet is just constantly every day doing like 4 different heartworm treatments for dogs. And the spay neuter clinic. I think those are the points where we really shine. And I want to mention a program that we really started a couple years ago, but we've really dove into it last year, especially with COVID, is it sort of what you might lump into what's called a pet food pantry. We're finding that there are a lot of folks who were struggling to pay for pet food for their own pet family pets, to the point where they were either sacrificing their own needs to try to pay for them, or they were forced to be in a position where they might have to surrender that pet because they couldn't afford their food. And we're lucky to get a lot of in-kind donations of pet food that we can use to redistribute through to those folks. So we've got our own program called Animeals that provides pet food for low-income and homebound seniors. And we work with Meals on Wheels. We have a new partnership with them, and they're delivering pet food to folks on our behalf who got pets at home that they can't afford to feed We were hearing about stories of people who were sharing their Meals on Wheels food with their pets because that was all they had. They were quarantined at home. They couldn't leave the house. They've got one friend. It's their dog. It's their cat. And they're suddenly at risk of losing that pet or needing to share their own food and sacrificing their own health to keep that important relationship in their life. So we're all really excited about what we've been able to do with that this past year and take those that donated food and distribute it in a really responsible way to the people who really need it the most, and preventing all those pets from being surrendered to the shelters as well. So it's a huge win-win that we get to keep those families together and prevent the influx into the shelters that might potentially cause too. So we're really excited about that program.
Yeah, that's a really, because I feel like there's dogs end up and animals end up in shelters for a number of reasons. And that's definitely one of them, is just people not being able to take care of their pets the way they want to. And I think that's a unique way to handle that, by going that route and giving these people food and making sure that they're staying healthy and that they can take care of their pets. And you guys are actually the first organization, at least organization I've talked to, that brought it up, that specializes in heartworm treatments. And I think that's awesome. I think I did not know it was that prevalent. But the way you say it, it makes sense. And is that just dogs then? Do cats not get heartworms? Do you not have to deal with that? Or is it really just dogs you see?
That's a great question. Dogs and cats can both get heartworms. Technically, humans can get heartworms. It's just not very common because our immune systems sort of take care of it for us for the most part. It's much more of an issue with dogs. We don't heartworm test cats. You can heartworm test cats, but the treatment that's required for treating heartworms is aggressive and it's difficult. It's tough for a pet to go through. The worms are literally living inside of their heart. They can cause all kinds of problems. They can get in the lungs. They can dislodge and cause clots, to basically have the pet throw a clot. It can be fatal and it can get really out of control. And the treatment for it, you have to kill the worms, obviously, but then the worms need somewhere to go. It's a complicated process and it is generally fairly dangerous to the pet. And cats can't really be successfully treated for heartworms just because of their physiological differences from dogs. So you could test a cat for heartworms and learn that it has heartworms and then really not be able to do anything about it. But then you're pouring all these resources into testing cats, and it's much more rare in cats than it is in dogs. So it can happen. It's more rare and it can't really be treated. Whereas in dogs, it's a lot more common. And it can be treated. So we focus on testing those dogs for heartworms. When they come up positive, we treat them. We provide the entire treatment, and with them in foster care with their adopter, they go through a process called foster to adopt, where they come in, get multiple treatments over the course of a few months until they're clear from their heartworms, and then they can finalize their adoption. So yeah, it's a kind of a strange thing. I remember being surprised when I learned that humans can get heartworms technically, because yeah, they come from mosquito bites.
Yeah, it's like we're all at risk, I guess, but that makes sense though with the immune system. And I know that you're not a doctor or vet or anything, but I mean, do you know off the top of your head, when should someone get their dog treated? Are there signs? Like, do you know at all? Like, what's that like?
Yeah, there are some signs that you can look out for. The best thing is to get your dog tested for heartworms. So I think what most vets recommend, again, like you said, I'm not a vet, so I'm speaking from like sort of our protocols and what vets tell us. Most vets, their protocol is to have dogs treated for heartworm or tested for heartworms either every 6 months or every year. And dogs should be kept all the time on monthly heartworm preventative. If your dog misses 1 month of their heartworm preventative, they can get heartworms that month. So if there's ever a lapse in heartworms preventative, which happens, you will want to contact your vet and have them tested. And generally it takes about 6 months from the time a dog is bitten with the mosquito carrying the heartworm eggs for the heartworms to show up in their system where they would test positive. So if your dog is, as soon as you get a dog, whether it's puppy or whatever, you want to get them on preventative right away. And then 6 months after that would be when you start testing. So we test dogs 6 months and older for heartworms, because It takes 6 months to develop, and there's no point testing a four-month-old puppy. They would never test positive even if they had them. So, preventative is absolutely key. That's super important. And that's something we try to educate on too, because, I mean, speaking for myself, before I worked in animal rescue, before I had a dog of my own, I didn't understand heartworms. I think I knew that they existed, but I had no idea how common they were. It seemed like a poster at the vet's office that you see and you go, oh, that's icky, I don't want that. But I didn't really have an understanding of how common it was in this area, or how easy it was for dogs to get them, and how important preventative was. And so through getting a dog of my own and working here, and I used to work in the admission center, bringing those dogs in and doing their heartworm tests and getting them into the rescue through those first few steps. And we saw a lot of heartworms. It is incredibly common. And it is a big reason why pets can't be adopted through those shelters, and they need special placement. So that's why they come to us.
Yeah, that's amazing that you guys are that kind of, like you said, that haven where some of these dogs that might, it's like a last resort type deal. And I think that's always amazing when rescues take that on, that project, and it can manifest in a few different ways, you know, like, and that's one of them. So that's cool. That's really cool. And what are some things that you guys are working on in the upcoming months and year that you're excited about? I know you've kind of alluded to some things and programs that you've already been working on, but what's that like for you guys?
Yeah, we're sort of, our eye is constantly on how can we do more? How can we reach more people? How can we reach the communities that really need our help? So that's something that we're thinking about like right now a lot is reaching those underserved communities where there's a resource disparity. They don't have access to low cost spay neuter. They don't have access to education about veterinary stuff or low cost vet services in general, like getting vaccines. You know, my dog needs a rabies vaccine and they can't afford to go to a vet and pay the office visit fee plus the cost of the vaccine itself. So we don't have anything hard happening right now because the laws only just recently changed in North Carolina to allow private rescues to offer veterinary services to the public. It used to be illegal, but just recently that changed. So we're starting to look at what areas need the help the most, how can we get in those areas, and what do they need from us? And then sort of figuring out the logistics of that. So right now we're fundraising for a new building. We're doing a big campaign that's going to be down the road in a few years. It's going to be a source of education and a lot of those sorts of services, and almost a little bit like a community center style place. So we're hoping that's going to lend itself to that sort of program as well. But yeah, that's what's on our mind right now is besides the annual, can we take in more pets than we took in last year? Are we growing? Can we do more? Can we save more? Can we say yes more times than we did last year? Is reaching the people who need us the most and starting to expand out into serving people as much as pets and reaching out into the communities rather than waiting for them to call us for help. Because until now, the balance has been a little bit off kilter and the need has been much greater than the resources. And so it's been more of us receiving thousands of calls asking for help. And we're starting to get into that realm where we can go, okay, let's reach out to them and offer help. We're in a position now where we can reach out to those people who might need it and not realize it, or start to offer services to those folks. So, yeah,
that's really exciting. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. It really is. It's a lot can change year to year, and it's really cool to be a part of it. We all love getting to see this happen before our eyes and see the progress made from 1 year to the next. It is incredibly rewarding. And I want to mention that we don't receive any kind of government funding. The stuff that happens at the SPCA is because of the people who support it. Every rescue that happens here is because somebody wrote a check, somebody came in and made a donation. So we're sort of the arms and the instruments of this rescue process, but the rescuers, it's this community supporting itself by donating to the SPCA and making all of these programs possible in the first place. It's this sort of wonderful cycle of people helping themselves. And we're just sort of the logistical body that just physically gets it done.
That's a really cool way to put that. And that kind of leads me into what I was going to ask you is, well, where can people find you guys, donate, be a part of, see you guys? Like, where can we all see this at?
Oh, yeah. We would love to have your help. Please join us. So you can find information about all of these different programs at spcawake.org. And that's Wake, W-A-K-E. So you can find information about volunteering. We've just now reopened to the public to bring adopters back into the building to meet their pets in person. We've been closed and doing all adoptions by appointment due to COVID. So volunteers and adopters are now back in the building. We're happy to have all of our favorite smiling faces back here with us. If you're interested in donating, you can do so at the website. Anything that you are able to give is a huge help. Like I said, everything that's happening is because somebody made a donation. So if you can give anything, it goes right back into those rescue programs. And we can receive in-kind donations at our Pet Adoption Center in Raleigh. You can find directions on the website as well. We can always use, especially bottle feeder supplies this time of year, for kittens. we're drowning in baby kittens. It sounds like a good thing, but it's not. bottles, kitten formula, kitten wet food, playpens, things like that. Anything that a young kitten could need, we would love to have. So yes, if you feel so inclined to support our mission, to support what we're doing, those are three awesome ways that you can do that is volunteer, donate some money if you have some that you can spare, or bring some supplies by. We would love to have them.
That's amazing. And yeah, definitely everyone, no matter where you're listening, that'll be in the description below. Samantha, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing about yourself and the organization and all that you guys are doing out there. North Carolina, thank you so much. It was awesome talking with you.
Thanks, Chris. This has been a real joy. I was excited to talk to you, and thanks for having me on.
Perfect. All right. We'll talk soon.